TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Oh, let's go!
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take it with triple chop, y'all. We're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this afternoon at tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is, and you'll hear from Michael Remus throughout the program. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. We're just going to pause now, as he should be ready to go in about the next 10 minutes or so. How you doing? You done fiddling with everything over there?
My headphones aren't working. I don't know what's going on here, Drew. You're trying to lock me out here.
Yeah, sabotage is exactly the word I would prefer to use. Ezra, how are you doing this fine day?
I'm doing great. I promise to make whole all of my efforts to you. Whether it's 50-50, 53-47, whatever, I'll make whole to you, Drew. I always do. I'm doing good. I'm ready to go here. I'm ready to talk anything but.
Well, you're going to be disappointed.
Anything but the lockout.
You definitely ate whole this morning.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's the most important meal of the day.
Well, you can't get that analysis anywhere else. Drew, I'm happy to be here as well.
Nice to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to prefer to talk about hockey, but at least we have something to talk about this week, being obviously the offers and the counter proposal that was put forth by the PA. We're fortunate, whether or not people believe that was the right thing to do for the NHL to publicize the offer, we're fortunate to have the details of the offer. And we can break them down.
And that's what we're going to do today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So if you haven't had enough CBA talk, and I'm sure you haven't, settle in. Because, we're going to go really, on this program, we like to say we go team by team, division by division.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're going to go clause by clause, offer by offer, in regards to the CBA negotiations that unfolded throughout the course of the week.
So make sure you understand everything.
That's right. So you can
make sure we understand everything.
That's right, because you can hash it out, and maybe we'll might learn something from one another.
Tim has helped me out. I now have headphones. You know what, Drew? What kind of operation are you running here?
Am I in charge now?
Well, probably not. I think Richie should be in charge. Richie always has his headphones working. He's always making sure that my headphones are working. It's important. I can't hear. I know you're sitting right beside me, but I need to hear what you sound like in...
I can tell you one thing, Ezzy. We don't need to hear what you have to say. Maybe our headphones should be the ones that are broken, and then yours should work.
Or his mic be cut, at the very least. Anyways, let's get into the proposal. We'll get into the proposal next segment. I just want to talk about it sort of on the general terms.
Sure.
The tone of the week, the content, the discussions, the back and forth, the attitudes involved. Was this a good week or a bad week in terms of CBA negotiations?
I think it was a good week. I think it was productive. And I know people are going to get caught in the rhetoric from both sides. But look at the facts and look at what was offered. First of all, there were offers. There were two offers. And they were kind of on a similar wavelength, but not necessarily right, side by side in terms of their thought process. I do think that they're in the same ballpark.
Baby steps.
And I think that's important. Now, I do think that those issues in terms of the free agency, arbitration, all that stuff is going to be a little bit more difficult to get through than I think people believe right now. But in terms of the 50-50, they both have basically agreed that it needs to get to 50-50. Now, I know there's a huge discrepancy, maybe $600 million worth of how to get there, but they both conceded they think that is fair. So it's almost as if they agree on an ongoing basis, 50-50 works. So they now have to deal with the contracts that have been signed beforehand. But that is a point that seems to be agreed to. On an ongoing basis, it'll be 50-50 for the most part. I mean, obviously, the I's aren't dotted and the T's aren't crossed, but that's progress. Now, should this have happened months ago? Sure. Of course it should have. And what do they wait for? We don't really know. Why would they put insulting offers forward? I don't know. But we are where we are, and it's at this point now where we have to say, okay, we've far more progress has been made than last week.
The key word that Richie used there was progress. And in the last month, we've seen little progress. And, you know, we know about the focus group, that whole Deadspin leak, the focus groups, and that might have been the reason why the NHL made the proposal on Tuesday. Regardless...
Let me just interrupt for a second about the focus groups. It doesn't really bother me that much. Shouldn't they be doing that sort of thing? I mean, they should be obviously negotiating rather than going into focus group analysis.
Sure.
But any sort of big business, I think, would do a focus group study when they're trying to change when they're involved in a negotiation of this nature. It doesn't tremendously bother me. I mean, I think if they had been using a focus group that was, you know, sunny and warm and doesn't have the bad reputation that Frank Lutz has.
I think that's the point, right?
Yeah. I mean, so they chose to use a guy who worked for the Republicans. Just because he worked for the Republicans doesn't mean... And I say this as somebody, as you guys well know, would never really fall on that side of the political spectrum. Yeah. But just because
Never, but not recently.
Fine.
Vote Justin Trudeau.
No, I'm not getting into that. But just because that guy... worked for the Republicans, I don't think necessarily should disqualify him from working for an NHL.
No, Drew, you're right. And I think, but, you know, I agree with you actually on that for once. But I think that you could say that was negative spin. We could probably agree on that for the NHL. So, I mean, Richie and I were actually, you know, went out for lunch at a fine establishment downtown Winnipeg on Tuesday. And when the news was breaking, the offer kind of came in Tuesday morning.
Off air, we'll deal with the fact I wasn't invited.
Well, you're not downtown, so it was an impromptu. Richie was at court, anyways. So when the offer came, it was surprising, and this surprised media because all we were expecting this week. I mean, when we talked on the show last week, all we were expecting was a couple meetings, maybe their usual hour, half an hour meeting. This was significant. And again, progress was made. And, you know, Donald Fehr came out and he did his press conference with Jonathan Toews and Sidney Crosby and Eric Staal, all the players in the background saying this wasn't a good day. Well, you know, he might be saying that, but again,
just because he says it doesn't necessarily make it true.
Right. This is a process. You're going to hear that again and again. And if in the first 30 days we took baby steps, then this was at least an actual step. I mean, this was, you could even argue that this was a large step. And like Richie said, we know that the NHL's hardline position is 50-50 now. And we know that the NHLPA really is worried about the players not losing any of their the full salaries in the first 3 years and all the escrow payments and all that. The problem now is how long are you going to take to get to 50-50? NHL wants it year one, and I think based on the proposals that we haven't gone over yet, it looks like Donald Fehr doesn't want that to happen till year four or five, if that. So, I mean, we made some progress here. I think NHL fans are getting more and more angry as each day passes, and games have been canceled up until November 2nd. But I think there's no reason to believe that the NHLPA not having any of their proposals get accepted by the NHL means there's going to be no season. I think that on Tuesday, there was a lot more hope. With progress, there's hope. And I don't think that, just because the NHL and the NHLPA haven't come to an agreement yet, that there isn't going to be a season. I think you should still be optimistic that we're going to see a season, whether that's a full season or a half season. I have no idea. Just like nobody knows at this point. Because the next month is really important.
I think it's even more than the next month. I think it's the next 10 days are important.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, both sides, I mean, they've come off of their positions to some extent regarding the 50-50, the NHL more so than the NHLPA.
Right.
But it's pretty obvious that it's on the table. It's just a matter of getting there at this point in time. We all know that eventually it's going to end up at the 50-50.
Yep.
It's just a matter of getting there. And the number of the different options really haven't... You know, the options from both sides are slightly disingenuous in that both sides are claiming that their offers are 50-50 when they're really not.
And they're trying to pull the wool over our eyes.
Yeah, they're using semantic arguments and sort of funny accounting to pretend that it's 50-50. And this goes for both sides, the NHL and the NHLPA.
Completely.
But... You know, 50-50 the fact that both sides know that the end with the... They both acknowledge, finally, publicly what the end game is.
That's right. What I'm saying. On an ongoing basis, there doesn't seem to be much confusion. It's dealing with the current contracts, which is, I think, about 60% of the league, they said.
That's it. And we'll talk about that in the course of as we break down the different offers from both sides. It's how do you deal, going forward, if you can get to 50-50, and both sides sort of acknowledge that you have to get to 50-50, how do you deal with the contracts that the players have already signed that are in existence, that expire next year, the year after, 3 years down the road, or in the case of, you know, the Shea Webbers and the Zach Parises and the Ryan Suters, you know, 10, 11, 12 years down the road? How do you deal with those in the context of the 50-50 argument? And that's the part that, thus far, no one has really been able to answer.
Right, and when you talk about endgame, Richie, remember we had Sean McDonald on, professor at the Asper School of Business at the U of M, and he was talking about deadline hunting. We got a deadline there. We've seen
that's
a deadline,
right.
And that deadline, to me, is with what happened on Thursday. I mean, that deadline, that being November 2nd to get a full 82-game schedule, I mean, that deadline, you're basically going to have to make a deal by middle of this week for that to happen. But that was a deadline. That was the first deadline that came out by the NHL. And whether or not you believe that was a make it or leave it deal, they put a deadline out there. And if there's going to be a full
No side would ever come out with a deal and say, it's got a lot of wiggle room. You can negotiate amongst it. They're not going to admit to it. They might believe it or they might not believe it. But publicly, they're not going to present an offer and say, it's not really worth the paper it's printed on. It's, you know, change it however you want it. That's not negotiating.
That's not Gary Bettman's style either.
It's just not logical negotiation. You know, why would you present an offer that you would publicly then admit to being completely open-ended and being able to be completely changed? It wouldn't logically make any sense to do that.
I agree, Drew. And based on the two people in charge, I think it's also a factor, right? Like, I mean, some other people may have a trust level between the two of them. They can negotiate with an understanding that there are wiggle room on certain points. With Gary Bettman and Donald Fehr, I don't really see that being the issue, being a possibility, really. They're both hardliners.
It's funny, though, you know, you mentioned trust, right? And Gary Bettman and Donald Fehr, they've done their homework. Obviously, Gary Bettman owes his business, and Donald...
It didn't seem that Donald Fehr did his homework on that third offer.
That third offer, he didn't, and that's why I was surprised he came out with it, and we'll talk about the third offer, but that's the one that surprised me the most, when he publicly admitted that he hadn't... Oh, it's a 50-50 deal. Take my word for it, but I haven't run the numbers on it.
Well, but
that, to me, is a tactical error by Donald Fehr.
Right, and if you look at those proposals, which we're going to do in the first hour, Richie, they're not really 50-50, and the problem is... And this is where it gets confusing. We're going to have to whip out the abacus to figure this one out. I mean, if we'll go to 50-50 if the revenues go by this percentage.
Right.
I mean, like you said, it's a lot of tricky accounting. That's what it is.
Of course. It's, you know, it's 50-50, but, you know, just take our word for it. Don't look too deep into it. But unfortunately, as they should, they look too deep and say, whoa, this isn't really 50-50.
Yeah, and they're involving the public. And so the public has an idea of what both are offering, whereas in general negotiations, that's not the case.
And we'll talk about the fact that the NHL made the offer public. To me, that makes perfect sense. I don't see a problem with it whatsoever.
I think it's a labor practice question, right? Going right to the players as opposed to through Donald Fehr.
Well, exactly.
But, I mean, I don't personally have an issue with it, but it's, you know, it's a fine line,
and it's hypocritical.
Right?
Remember, Donald Fehr was the one who suggested initially, way back when there was still some hope that there wouldn't be a lockout, that the negotiations should be televised and broadcast to the public.
So I can't have any qualms with it, can I?
Well, and he didn't. He said, that's fine. That's their prerogative. I don't have any complaint about it, to his credit. He didn't try and make an issue of it. Some of the media were saying, whoa, I don't know if this is a good sign that they released it publicly, but... Obviously, it isn't anything to be concerned about. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll start going through each of the different offers in detail. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Legal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. Great drink specials, great different specials each day of the week at Carbone. Take tonight, for example, Carbone cocktails, $1 off the Carbone signature cocktails. So if you're looking for a place to have a great meal, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue is the place to be.
Had some good stuff there on Wednesday.
Really?
Pick up, actually.
Oh, that's good. You can pick it up also. You don't have to necessarily eat there. That's perfectly an option available to you.
Absolutely.
Let's start by breaking down. Let's start with the NHL's offer. They made, put out their one offer earlier this week. Tuesday had a lot of optimism. And I think the reason that it had a lot of optimism, and you, Richie, you and I were talking about this off air, is that it got to the 50-50 mark that right. people, for the most part, think is fair.
Yep.
Now, is 50-50 fair when it's currently 57-43 in the players' interest?
Well, I mean, 50-50, is it fair? That's I guess, subjective. This is a completely new negotiation. They can use whatever numbers they really want to use. They're using the old numbers as a framework. There's no obligation to use the old numbers. 50-50, I think what they're doing, Drew, is they're using what happened in NFL and more so in the NBA. It's a more comparable league considering how much NFL TV money there is, and NBA gets more TV money than the NHL as well. But the NBA is a more comparable league, and I think that's what they're taking after here.
Let's start with the term. Okay. So the term of the CBA proposed by the league, 6 years with a mutual option for a seventh year. Okay, so pretty straightforward. What do you think? Six?
I liked a little longer, frankly. The mutual option, obviously, both sides need to agree to continue for a year, which would mean both sides are making money. How often can they agree on anything here? So,
was there a mutual option in this CBA?
Then they're actually...
Or was there a player's option?
Player's option, I think, and they exercised it for the last year.
I think that's how it was, exactly.
Maybe everybody must check up on that, but why not 8 years?
Why not 10 years?
Not 10. I mean, their TV deal with U.S. is 10 years. Why not just do it in conjunction with that?
Right. Yeah, and I agree. I agree on this point. I mean, again, this is the second lockout in 8 years. Okay? And if this CBA, it looks like that it's going to be 6 to 8 years, right? So if there's an option 7, maybe, who knows. But
6 isn't enough.
It isn't. And
back again 6 years.
You can't have this because... When you look at 2003-2004, after that season, the Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup, but you had a lot of problems in the Sun Belt. And people forget about this, too. You had problems with the Canadian franchises. And after that lockout, we saw sellouts in Montreal, Toronto, where you'd expect. But you also saw continued success in Calgary, continued right. success in Edmonton. Vancouver was one of the most successful franchises since the lockout. You can't have this again because you're going forward. Things look good for the NHL at this point with the record revenues and the teams like the Kings and the Hawks and the Bruins winning the Stanley Cups. The NHL is very strong right now where it is strong. But to me, to have a 6 or 7 year lockout, if you're having a 6 or 7 year CBA, you're almost saying, you know what? We're not really sure if this CBA is going to be good enough that we can have it for 10 years. And so for the fans out there...
Because the NFL is 10 years.
Exactly. And Richie, who's to say that there won't be a lockout in 2021 or whenever this... I mean, they should be trying to avoid this. To me, there's still a little bit of uncertainty with what's going to happen with some of these franchises. So, I mean, to make a long answer shorter...
And the NBA one is 10 years as well.
The six-year CBA is a little bit troubling. I mean, who can actually sit back and say, oh, we won't have this problem 6 years from now?
No argument from me, I think.
The truth is, Drew, and I'd like to get in here for a second. The truth is, yeah, they're both NFL and NBA are 10-year deals. So if you're going to copy them, you might as well. But I think the other thing is if you're a player... Every single time you have a CBA negotiations, you inevitably lose something.
That's right.
So you'd want to extend it as long as possible.
Yeah, you want exactly because it 6 years, 10 years, however many years down the road from now, it's unlikely that the owners aren't going to want something again back from
That's right.
the players,
exactly
especially
right.
if revenues continue to go up.
Right.
First of all, this is completely off topic. When you think of the NHL, isn't it somewhat surprising that it's a $3 billion business?
It is.
Does it scream $3 billion business? Yearly?
A lot of money. But the teams that make a lot of money, the Canadian TV contract is lucrative. It's just, it's only going to get more lucrative. We know that the NBC deal, is something that the NHL's happy with that because, the Versus deal and all that wasn't very good. The NBC deal has come along and there's a lot of money out there. But the problem is there's a lot of franchises right now that are struggling. So,
can the NHL and their American and TV deals combined be the same or close to an NBA TV deal? Maybe they can. I don't know what the NBA just recently re-upped for, but not going to be in the baseball realm. You're not going to be in the football realm.
But you're not the weak. I mean, you're not the weakling little sister anymore. Just because TV revenues for all professional sports have just gone through the roof.
Because live programming is hot.
So. That's right. Because it's not. You can't DVR through it.
Right.
Right. Most people don't. And the thing is, Drew, why the next, you know, the length of the CBA is really important. I know we want to get back to the owner's offer, but I mean, you've got hockey back in Winnipeg. They sold out 13,000 season tickets, strong. The TV deal is strong. The connection with TSN Jets and all that, it's strong. And you've got cities that, you know, potentially can have an NHL team back, Quebec City, Markham. I mean, there's room for growth, but you have to deal with those franchises that are losing money. If you don't deal with that, and that's something that I think is
going to... Gary Bettman doesn't deal with that, and that's proven. Well,
next portion of the owner's offer. HRR accounting, hockey-related revenue accounting. How do they determine the pie that is then split up, right, however it is eventually split up? The NHL says we don't want to change that. You know, that's pretty much what they're saying, is that currently we'll leave the pie as is.
And in their explanation on the website, they write none of these, so they want to have some clarifications and some specifications. But
any ambiguity,
right, and both there's been sides, some about city tax breaks and all that stuff. But what they say is none of these clarifications, for instance, would have a material impact on the 2011-2012 actual HRR number. Now, that's their perspective. We haven't heard from the NHLPA whether or not they believe there's a material impact.
Right.
But
and the NHLPA would certainly say there is a material impact.
Yes.
We've heard about it, some of the different things that the owners get to write off, for lack of a better word, from the HRR accounting, be it expenses related to revenue, luxury suites and things of that nature. So there is probably a disagreement there, but for the most part, they would work together to try and come to a mutually beneficial agreement related to the HRR accounting. Your thoughts on keeping the pie the same?
I'm fine with it. I don't think that's an issue at all. They seem to generally be happy. The players have got a nice cut. If you were to say keep everything the same, 57%, they'd probably say yeah. Now they're moving it down to 50. They're obviously going to want to reevaluate the HRR because they both want an edge, but I'm fine with it being essentially the same.
Absolutely, and to me... The NHLPA would obviously like that pie to be bigger, and we've gone over that before with some of those revenue streams that they wanted included. But again, I mean, you're talking about the NHL owners and how they're running their business, and if the NHLPA has an issue with what they declare the revenue, and I mean, it seems fine, but I mean, again, that seems to be. It seems to be the NHLPA is trying to get a little bit more out of the pie, and the NHL saying no. Well, that's not hockey related rep. So again, this is whose accountant can make a better argument here, really.
Yeah. Applicable player share. That's really the splitting of the pie. That's the 50-50 split.
Right.
Now, the problem with the 50-50 split, what the NHL is saying is a 50-50 split. The NHLPA would say, no, it's not.
Exactly.
And then it's the same on the other side. When we go through the players' offers to the owners, the players would say, here's our 50-50 split.
Right.
And the owners would say, that's not 50-50 either.
Right.
So right now the problem is, and this is the big problem, is both sides cannot determine what actually 50-50 means.
Right. And remember we talked about this before, Richie, with... You know, luxury boxes. Remember, are you going to claim 100% of the luxury box as revenue? Well, for instance, you know, in LA where they have the Lakers and the Kings, some of the guys that have these luxury boxes, some of those games are to watch LA Lakers games. So that was one of the things. And I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think that those other things might be worth $500 million. I have no idea.
Right.
But to me, at this point, You hope that they've already really agreed on this is.
That's right.
I don't know, but it seems kind of ridiculous at this point. The TV deal is the big one, right?
50-50 shares you're talking about, Drew, the applicable player shares. You know, they have it for six, for each of the 6 years, it would immediately turn to 50-50. So this is fine as it is, but we need to deal with it. We'll talk about it later in terms of how do you account for the 7% drop immediately.
That's right. And that's really the big sticking point.
That's it.
The players don't want to give back any money. They don't want there to be a rollback. And the owners, and honestly, when you're at 57 and you want to get to 50 and you want to get there immediately,
that's the thing.
There's almost no way for there not to be a rollback. That's
right.
The problem.
That's right.
I mean, And that's where both sides haven't been able to figure it out. I don't know if the answer is deferred payments until later on in a career, or deferred payments until, you know, somebody's, you know, retired, and then you get a and you get interest on it until then. And that's the, you know, to me, it is very it's disingenuous and it's almost fraudulent to sign a contract knowing you're not going to honor that contract. And that's what these NHL owners. And
I wouldn't say it's fraudulent. You might think
you don't think it's fraudulent to sign a contract in the summer, knowing that three months later.
Do you know that though? Do you know that's what the consensus is going to be in the owner's room? Do you know that's what's going to happen? What if you don't have a say? What if you're one of the owners who doesn't agree with it?
It's a good point.
But signs anyhow.
Honestly, you don't. You're right. You're absolutely right in terms of the strict. Most people, though, most logical people, right, knew that this was going to be 50-50. And then you go see these guys, or they knew that they were going to try and roll back the HRRs somehow. Right. And then you got these guys signing these contracts with the knowledge that 2 months later, you're going to ask for some of it back.
Okay, but
collectively, if a business isn't doing well, mm-hmm. I'm not saying I agree, but I'm saying collectively, if a business isn't doing well and one of their top CEOs or whatever is signed, then they say, you know what? We realize that somebody below the CEO is signed, and they say, you know what? We're not making as much money as we thought we were.
Yeah.
We need to cut your salary back. I mean, they're allowed to try for it.
They're certainly allowed
and
to try for it.
And is it disingenuous? Well, in the way the NHL owners have done it, somewhat. I don't think it's fraudulent. But do I think they should honor them and find a way to pay them back, whether it be over time or immediately? And yes, I do. But, I mean, it's within their right to request it. Collective bargaining.
Look, everything's within the rights to request. I'm just saying, for me, from my perspective,
people get a little bit of a sticking point in terms of like what the system was based on what it needs to be this time. It really has no bearing on it.
Right. What happened in the past is the past.
Right.
And this
is a whole new negotiation.
Agreed with you there.
So
let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue going through the NHL's offer to the players. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come this afternoon, Craig Custance from ESPN.com is going to join us. We'll talk CBA with him. And then in the last hour, Illegal Curve is proud to be one of the sponsors of the Movember movement in Winnipeg.
Yep.
We're going to be joined by Jennifer Botterill. You know her as
one of the greatest
female hockey players,
Olympian. Of all time, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. She's involved in Movember as well, so she's going to join us to talk about Movember coming up in the last hour.
Are you going to? I'm going to do the mustache. Are you guys going to participate or what?
I'm just picturing Drew with a mustache right now.
I think I'd be Hassan with a mustache.
Really? You think you could pull it off?
No, you look very Tom Selleck-ish, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think I could pull it off.
I don't think I could pull it off. I think I'd look ridiculous, but I mean, I could grow a mustache pretty well, I think.
I mean, I don't think mine would be that good.
Really?
I think Dave Manuk and I of
if I take after my dad, that would be good. I could try it.
Your Dave dad did have a mustache.
Dave Manuk's grew one for Movember last year.
I mean, Dave's handsome.
Terrible.
Dave's handsome regardless.
I thought it wasn't bad.
I thought it was a terrible mustache. No offense, Dave. I know you're listening.
I disagree. I think it was a very good mustache. In fact, he was getting comments in the MTS Center.
Of course you would agree with Dave Manuk. You love Dave Manuk.
If you had a mustache, he was my boy. You might be arrested on while walking to work.
What Dave and I are going to do, I might as well release it now. What we're going to do is we're going to have a picture blog following our mustaches. We're going to get hits through the roof, baby.
Something like that. Let's continue talking about the NHL's proposal, as they've deemed it, the NHL proposal to save the 82-game season. So
time is running out.
Time is running out. Exactly right. We've gone through the term. We've gone through the accounting. We've gone through the player's share, the payroll range. And this is sort of the next one that's up on the list there.
Pretty simple.
Yeah, it's using existing methodology. You know, right now there's the payroll floor, there's the payroll ceiling, and then there's the middle area. They would continue computing it the same way they computed it in 2011-2012. So based on
to interrupt you, I think the midpoint's only really relevant for the qualifying mechanisms for the revenue sharing, I thought. Because if you spent in the top half,
yeah.
Not sure if that's the case or not, but in any event, I think its midpoint's kind of irrelevant.
Right. The lower point, based on their estimates, would be $44 million.
Yeah.
The upper level would be $60 million. The midpoint would be $52 million. But there is a rule in place that for only the 2012-2013 season, it's a transition rule that will allow clubs to spend up to $70 million just for that 1 year, and then they have to be back down below the ceiling come 2013-2014.
Because if you didn't have that, you'd be in a penalty. If you look at the teams right now, the Bruins are at almost $69 million.
Yeah.
Actually, if you look at...
Because, the salary cap this year right now was scheduled to be about $70 million.
Well, if you look, you know, Richie's going to bring up the salary caps right now.
16 teams are over $60 million right now.
Right, but Drew mentioned the owners and signing these contracts knowing that there was the potential for a lockout. And exactly, Richie, look at these numbers, and everybody was expecting a $70 million salary cap ceiling because that's where, you know,
That gets back to what Drew was saying before about disingenuous. I mean, I don't think people actually thought the cap was going to be 70, but they felt, let's take advantage of it while we have this in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Let's sign these contracts, and then we'll figure out after the fact
how to deal with it.
How to deal with it, and the way they probably want to deal with it is through a rollback.
And that makes it easiest, doesn't it?
It makes it easiest for the owners, but the players would never, you know, I just signed a $100 million contract. Why should I roll it back? You know, you didn't have to offer me $100 million. You guys could have all colluded or said, you know, this is what the salary cap is going to be, or this is the salary cap we're operating under.
Drew, the problem with this transition rule is just, you know, on the topic of this. So, I mean, obviously, the owners in their offer on Tuesday said that even though the salary cap ceiling is going to be, you know, $60 million, just under $60 million, $59.9 million or whatever, you know, they're saying, okay, well, you know, L.A., Boston, all these teams, like Richie said, there's 16 teams. But you know what? If you're at your salary cap, that won't count. Well, you know, I think that's significant. That was something, you know, not just to help the owners who signed these contracts, but that's saying that, you know, you're not actually getting your salaries rolled back. This whole make-whole thing, the reality
we'll
is the NHLPA wants this make... What they want is...
They want their money on the existing contract.
But not just for the first year. They want it for year two, year three. And, I mean, if you look at it, there's no fit. The option three that we haven't even got to yet that the NHLPA countered with, it's not really 50-50 at all.
Well, no, and we haven't got to any of the NHLPA's offers, and we'll get to them. But that's the – option three is, I think, the most interesting of the three offers the NHLPA came up with.
Two's not bad either. One's not going to fly.
Well, Gary Bettman didn't even acknowledge the first two. Let's be honest here.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. Cap accounting. So this is sort of some of the changes into how you can come up with your cap. First of all, and this affects the New York Islanders, payroll, you must get to the payroll lower limit. You must get to the floor without including performance bonuses.
Now, if I understand correctly how the previous system would work was you would offer bonuses. The bonus money, like an entry-level deal for an Evander Kane, $3.1 million, I believe, would be counted against the cap. And then what happens is that cap that year is at $3.1 million. The actual bonuses get counted against the cap the following year, meaning what he actually accomplished.
Right.
But you're eating up cap money, and so what they're doing
is... It's fake money. You're not actually spending the money.
Right. Like, so that's a concession to the...
To the players.
Yeah.
You can... That's right. It's saying it's got to be... You actually have to reach the lower... You have to reach the floor in actual cash you have paid out as opposed to cash that is on paper and achievable through a number of bonuses.
I mean, I don't know how they're going to do bonuses now, Drew, though, because if you're near the top...
Mm-hmm.
I guess you're fine because if you're near the top, you're basically paying the guy what you're paying him. The next year, you're counting the bonus.
Next year, you actually have to account for it.
So there's no dead money.
No, there's no dead money. Exactly. Yeah. This next one. All years of existing standard player contracts in excess of 5 years.
This is NHL getting back at the managers.
At the NHL, will be accounted for and charged against the team's cap regardless of whether or where the player is playing.
Mm-hmm.
So what this means is if you've signed a contract for longer than 5 years.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rick DiPietro.
Anybody.
Take Ryan Suter.
Any of these guys. Their deal is longer than 5 years. If those guys retire, they're on the salary cap of the team. It used to be.
That signed them.
Even if they've gone
and
played for
their catch.
If you're Zach Parise, you play in Minnesota for the next 3 years and then you get traded. And then
here's the wording. If at some subsequent point in time the player retires or ceases to play and or receive pay under his NHL standard player contract, the cap charge will automatically revert at a full average annual value to the club that initially entered into the contract for the balance of its term. So you can take a guy at the end of his deal, use him as much as you can. He retires. It goes back to the old team.
That's right. You've signed a guy for 10 years, $100 million. You use him for 5 years and then you trade him. And then he goes plays for another team for the next 2 years, and he's that team's responsibility for those 2 years in terms of salary cap. Then he retires with 3 years left on his contract. the team that originally signed him to that deal is responsible for that salary cap hit. He could have played on five different teams in the meantime.
That's right.
But it means that...
The team that tried to evade the system, or you'd say use the system, but NHL would say tried to evade what the system was attempting to do and accomplish...
Is getting punished, for it.
Isn't that going to make GMs think a little bit harder about trading a guy...
For sure.
...who's under a 7 or 9 year deal?
Let me ask you this question. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You've already stuck with the guy, whether you might as well use him. Let me ask you guys this question. What do you think about the concept that all contracts will be 5 years? Maximum 5 years.
I told you before, I don't like it. Because I think what happens is then you get the idea of playing in New York or whatever it may be is a little more appealing to it. You know, if you have an offer from New York or from Winnipeg, Winnipeg can maybe thinks that 7 years is the way to get this deal done and get this contract.
See, Richie, that's a secondary issue, though, as far as, apart from the HRR. And I don't.
That's
I
one
agree
that Gary
with you.
Wants, though.
It's not good. Okay, first off, it's not good for fans. You know.
Well, I think five-year contracts are good for fans in terms of performance of players.
Okay.
You don't get too fat and comfortable on your contract.
That's not kind of what sense or what context I meant. I meant as far as a player staying with a team.
Right.
I agree with you guys. As far as. You could make the argument that, you know, in pro sports, you should never sign a guy for more than 5 years, really, because you could count so many guys who've signed 10-year deals that it just doesn't work. I'm going to drop A-Rod as being one of them.
Yeah,
but for fans, I mean, let's be honest. Hockey fans love their teams. If you're a Jets fan, you'll be a Jets fan forever, hopefully. And you want guys to sign long-term deals. I mean, the Pavlics, the Canes, all these guys, you want those guys to be on your team. You want to buy the jersey. You want to cheer for the young players.
Fair enough.
You want them to stay with your team. And I don't see in any way the NHLPA accepting anything below 7 years. I don't even know if they'll accept that.
I debate the NHL would take six.
But, Richie, the thing is, I think this is important. You know, we did our free agency show, and then a couple days later, Parise and Suter signed 12-year deals, right? So they signed 12-year deals, and now you're going to cap contracts at 5 years. To me, that is going to be extremely hard to sell as part of the CBA.
But the other issue to take into account here is, say you sign a 12-year deal. So Parise and Suter signed a 12-year deal.
Yeah.
In 10 years, the cap might be $150 million, and their $7 million contract will be just nothing.
That's right. For the players, you don't know what the future necessarily has in store.
That's right.
So you might be locking yourself up at a discounted rate, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the road from now, when you could be really making, you know, $15-17 million if revenues explode. And I mean, the truth is, you give up you got your guarantee, so you're comfortable with that, but you give up the flexibility of what the future has to offer.
But you know, you mentioned the difference between the pie and the NHLPA wants to, you know, redefine what, you know, how big this pie is. Isn't that the problem? Can't they look ahead, like Richie said, for the 10 years, the NBC deal, throw in the Canadian deal, whether it's with TSN, Rogers, whatever. You'd think that there's actuaries, accountants, lawyers in the room that can look and say, okay, we're going to make X amount of money, and if ticket revenue, let's put it this way, the NHL 6 years from now is not going to be a $10 billion industry. I mean, it's going to fall somewhere between... $4 and $5 billion. I mean,
well, we had Dr. Norm O'Reilly on last week talking about and I asked, you know, once the Canadian TV deal is complete, we already have the NHL US TV deal. I mean, how much more money is there to make on the side?
Exactly,
lot of that's going to be paid for by the fans, and they're going to raise ticket prices.
Exactly,
and they're going to go up every year, and the corporate write-offs are still going to be the kicker and everything.
Let's go to break. More on the NHL's offer to the NHLPA. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Tom Segura is performing. He's already sold out for tonight. So,
our buddy Mike Bell, aka Beller 79,
sounds great.
Yeah,
was asking me to go, but I have a Friday night curfew, so I couldn't go.
Yeah,
but I heard he's a really funny guy.
Very funny. Just been great. I think he sold out every single show that he was in town for. I think he got into town last Friday or something, and he sold out every single show. Next week at Rumors, Rory Scovell is in town. And, of course, you know that everybody that comes to Rumors is just top-notch because it's the best in it's the best comedy club in North America, the longest-standing independent comedy club in North America.
Awesome. Especially when Sheldon Mandel is there, it's top-notch.
Yeah, he doesn't perform anymore, though, so you know that's always too bad. Let's continue on with the NHL's explanation there. Next one. Money paid to players on standard player contracts in another professional league will not be counted against the player's share, but all dollars paid in excess of $105,000 will be counted against the salary cap. What that means pretty much is if you sign a player on your AHL team for, you know, $500,000.
Well, it also means if you have a guy like Wade Redden or Sheldon Surratt and send him to the minors, their cap it counts on the counts against the NHL.
That's right. You can't bury contracts in the AHL anymore.
Well, I'm pretty sure. Did they not say that? That's not just retroactive. That means if you do that this year, that'll count. Right. Scott Gomez.
That's right.
Well, they did.
I was under the impression that counts. If a team does that next season, this season.
I was under that same impression.
They can't do that.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
not just retroactive.
No, you can't bury. Well, it certainly wouldn't be retroactive.
Here's the benefit. The benefit for the players is that a guy with a big contract doesn't get sent to the minors because he's not living up to that deal and doesn't have to ride the buses for a long time.
Well, you saw Wade Redden. You went to see Wade Redden in Bridgeport?
Yeah, he looked terrible. He played for Hartford. It was in Bridgeport, but he looked terrible. But you get that protection. Now, on the other side, of course, there's not as much money for the team to spend now because that's on the cap. So in reality, money issue, it actually hurts the players probably because more money can be paid out to the players. Now, the problem is, you know, are you representing the greater good, or are you representing that one player who's getting sent to the minors? So it's a little bit of a conflict, but I think for the NHL, I actually like it, but it doesn't necessarily benefit the players financially.
It came out this week, you know, that this is really going to be punishing the GMs, but really, I think this is good for the game. I mean, I'm sorry, it's a little bit ridiculous when you have a guy making $6.5 million, then you put him in the AHL, and then it doesn't count against your cap.
Yeah, I agree.
That's something that Gary Bettman and, the NHL, this is something good. I mean,
penalizing the GMs, too.
Right.
Yeah,
can't just
absolutely.
Take a problem like Jeff Finger and throw him to the minors.
No, if you sign a bad contract, you should be stuck with that bad contract. That makes makes logical sense to me.
Mm-hmm. I agree, because you can't sign these big deals and then throw them down the minors, like McGillney and all that.
Yeah, you can't.
Malikov.
Yeah, exactly. You're stuck with the guy that you sign. You know, if you're a bad general manager, you get punished for making your bad decisions.
That's right.
As opposed to just wasting money. I mean, I don't have a problem with that one at all. The next one, I'm not even going to try and read it because it's complicated, but it involves the trading of salary cap space.
Right.
Something they've been talking about for a while.
Brian Burke wanted this for a while.
Yeah, you're only allowed to do it to a certain number of contracts. I believe it's about two contracts, and you can only trade up to $3
million. $5
million. Is it $5
million? Yeah.
$3 million on a specific contract.
Yes,
though.
$5 million total on two.
$5 million total on two, $3 million on an individual contract. Do you think teams should be allowed to trade cap
space?
Yeah,
I'm fine with that. I don't have any issue with it. If it's restricted to the point of $5 million and two contracts, that's fine.
It's not a significant amount of money or a significant number of contracts. So it's not like wealthy teams can start really taking advantage of the situation.
That's right.
See, again, and that's where you have the issues at the trade deadline where you're unloading salary. You know that you have a $4.5 million defenseman, and you can trade it to. This is actually more to do with, a team absorbing someone else's contract. But again, this is to me. These moves are encouraging GMs and teams to build their teams and their salary cap structure at the beginning of the season, able to use these. They're not really loopholes.
Well, the NBA is salary cap space, and you can trade the space.
Right.
It's kind of a similar idea.
Right.
Next topic, system changes. And this has to do with sort of entry-level contracts, salary arbitration, things of that nature. Let's start with the first one. The entry-level contract for a player will be 2 years, two full seasons, as opposed to now, which is it's now three full years.
I'm surprised by that.
That's pro-NHLPA big time.
Yeah, it is. I don't understand that at all. Except for the fact that they're trying to move arbitration. We'll talk about that in a second, to five seasons. So we'll talk about that. But
it means you have guys who would be,
They point out that when there's the explanation on the NHL website points out that when there's a guy who's in his third year of his entry-level deal and is clearly not an NHLer, you can get rid of him. But even if you'd have him, he's so cheap either in the he's so cheap at his minimum level or in the minors on an entry-level deal.
It's unlikely really you're going to cut him outright.
It doesn't hurt you. You probably want it to be 4 or 5 years. So for them to go to 2 years, I think the NHLPA is probably all over that.
Okay, Richie, what about this, though? Jordan Eberle, Taylor Hall, Jeff Skinner, all these guys before the lockout, how many years did they play? 2, and they had 1 year left on their entry-level contract. So this is kind of like, well, wouldn't Jim Rutherford and Jeff Tambellini have liked this? Because really, they signed these guys Steve Tambellini. Jeff Tambellini's his son. See, we're talking so much about owners and general managers. You threw a player in there.
That's right. Surprised.
No, but I mean, this is, to me, I saw this. Obviously, Richie nailed it, though, the UFA eligibility is proposed to go up. So maybe that's a...
Well, the arbitration key, because right now you had a guy like Evander Kane last year, or this one just this summer, who was in his no arbitration window of 1 year after 3 seasons. Now they're saying no arbitration until your fifth after your fourth year. So there's and then if they're cutting down the entry-level deals by one, if you follow my math, there's going to be 3 summers where they got no arbitration.
That's right. Especially because in CBA negotiations, they usually try and take blood from the next generation who's not at the table to defend themselves.
Right.
So it's surprising.
Yeah. So it'd be after the second one, you'd be no arbitration. After your third season, no arbitration. After your fourth season,
no
arbitration. Yeah.
So what it means is right now, you're eligible for salary arbitration after your fourth full year in the NHL.
But your fifth year.
So it moves it to your fifth year.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's an extra. So, you know, we talked about it last year with Zach Bogosian and this year with Evander Kane, RFAs with no salary arbitration.
But Drew, we talk about the owners having the hammer here and they give it up. So, I mean, I wouldn't be too concerned if I'm the players.
Right.
Not that they're going to agree to that necessarily, but again, the owners can't help themselves. So you have a guy like Kane, you have a guy like Bogosian, you have a guy like whoever it is this year, Skinner, you have a guy like Eberle. Now, those guys signed before they actually played their third year, but the idea being, at the end of the day, these guys are going to pay him what they pay him because they can't afford to not have him and they don't really care.
Well, you talk.
So they don't use the system to their advantage necessarily.
That's right. Because by having these rules in place, if they were to come to be, you would be able to depress the market.
That's right.
But they never go ahead and do that.
Never.
They always get ahead of themselves and sign these guys to 5-year deals when they have absolutely no leverage to demand a 5-year deal or they don't get a bargain on it. And a lot of the talk coming into the CBA negotiation was that the NHL wanted to cut down on the value of those. The second contract had grown exponentially.
All they're going to do now is bridge the first contract to the UFA year. So they're going to sign them to, this is what they're going to do, because they want UFA after 8 years of playing. So all they're going to do is play 2 years entry level, sign 6-year deals to their UFAs.
That's exactly
or longer
right.
than, actually, you can't do 6 years. You can only do five. So if they end up settling on 6, you're going to sign them to the UFA and then let them go.
Exactly right. That takes us to our next issue. Unrestricted.
Or do you sign them to 3 years? And then the question is, are you in a battle with him whether or not he gets free agency?
Next issue is unrestricted free agency moves to the age of 28 or 8 full seasons in the NHL, meaning the guys who come into the league at 18 years old, you know, the Jeff Skinners become free agents after 8 seasons
Richie,
in the NHL.
This is
something the NHLPA will never agree
with. I don't think so. I don't see that at all. And then, so it goes from 31 to 27 to 25, now back up to 28?
Well, 31 to 27 and then 7 years.
Yeah.
And now they want it to go from 27 and 7 years to 28 years old, you're a UFA regardless of what you've done, or 8 years played in the league, not 7. And remember, that was a huge thing that the NHLPA got in the last negotiations.
That
I don't see them budging
win.
On that one.
Huge win for.
I don't think that needs to be changed, frankly. I'm fine with the way it is.
But the NHLPA will never agree to making free agency a year later.
No, there's no way.
No.
Especially if they give up 7%. If they roll back.
No way. Why would they? Exactly.
If anything, they'd negotiate it to go down.
Well, one thing we didn't quickly qualify everything here. The NHL offer, aside from 1 or 2 points, if that, is all take.
Of course.
Just so you know.
Well, as you would expect, they're not going to. It's a negotiation. They're not going to negotiate against themselves. It's still all take. It's less all take than it was the first and second offer they put out, but it's still all take.
Yes, it's take.
I mean, there's no reason for the NHLPA, if they're going down, if they're losing in the share of hockey-related revenue, there's no reason and there's no way that they'd agree to make unrestricted free agency later on in a player's career. It doesn't make any logical sense.
And again, Drew, I know we got to go to break really quickly because we've got Craig Custance coming on.
But no, we have Craig Custance at 1:30.
Okay, sorry.
Well, we just have to go to break. We're up against the hour.
But I think that aside from the contract lengths and the age of free agency and all that, I think most of the stuff in here is good because the NHL players' salaries have gone up every year. The revenues have gone up with them. Most of the stuff here is good, and I think that you know, without you know, a few things in here, this is a deal that there's going to be a lot of things in here in the final deal. I'll tell you that much.
I don't know about that. As it's a negotiation. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going through the various CBA offers.
Clause by clause.
Yeah. Segment by segment.
Loophole by loophole.
In excruciating detail.
Talk about the tweet, though, if you want to.
Go ahead. Explain it, Richie.
Oh, no. There's a tweet from a listener, John Clusen, saying, nope, wrong guy. I love it. That was... Twitter's always so strong. You know, you don't have any comments milling. You're wrong. But no, this point is if you sign Kane after the second year, after 17 goals, he wouldn't make as much money on his second deal. Now, so his point being that if Evander Kane comes into negotiation after his second year of his contract, then what happens is he has less leverage than if he scores 30 goals. Now, if it's a two-year deal, maybe they don't bring a guy up for another year, and then they get two really good years out of him. But the point being that Kane then would be entitled to sign for a third year, if you wanted to do a one-year deal, could sign for a third year, and it could be more than he'd make under the entry-level deal. So entry-level generally controls costs, and I don't really see how this controls costs based on the way NHL general managers operate. I see his point. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I just don't think that the NHL general managers, based on past precedent, have proven that they're fiscally responsible enough to actually utilize a second contract.
Every second contract in life, for the most part, unless you're really bad in that first contract.
Marriage contract?
Not marriage, but most contracts are inflationary.
Yes.
So when you sign your first contract and you put in 2 years, you know, and it's your and you have no leverage and you're at your absolute base and you're a baby when it comes to contracts.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in the negative sense, but you're in your infancy when it comes to bargaining power. When you're no longer in your infancy, you're in your toddler ages, for keep this terrible analogy going, you know, you're going to sign for more than when you originally signed for.
But also, why would, if you're a team, if you don't have that third entry level year, would you keep a guy in the juniors year longer,
it's
or the minors?
It's very surprising that NCAA. The NHL would make that offer, because you think they'd want to take blood from the new generation. And you think NHLPA, exactly, for that matter, would want to give blood from the new generation.
If you're the NHLPA, you'd probably rather have 4 years entry level and and free agency at 6 years and 20,
absolutely,
you know.
You'd have 5 years of entry level. Right. You don't care. You don't represent those people. Those people have no voice at the table.
In the NFL negotiation, they give up the rookie contracts.
Exactly. You have no, I mean, those guys have no voice.
And I agree with that. I mean, I didn't understand why the NFL guys were getting paid, the rookies were getting paid as much as the proven veterans.
They shouldn't have been.
Yep.
And they changed it because both sides.
The seniors are generally making more than the youngsters.
It doesn't affect me, so I can give up. I can give you the moon.
But just a lot, not even that, though, Drew. No, it doesn't affect me, and that certainly plays into it. But it's also just, logically speaking, I mean, a guy who's putting more time generally gets more money. His blood, sweat, and tears have been in that bit.
And if he's good at it, you think for the most part, exactly. That's, you know, generally how it works. You ask for a raise at your job when you've been there for a few years because you've put in the sweat equity that makes you think you deserve that raise.
I asked for a raise on my first day. And I got it.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Limit on year-to-year salary variability on multi-year contracts. What that means is you can't backload these deals.
Right.
Can't front load them, you can't backload them. Each year has to be within 5% of the year before. If you sign a 3-year deal worth $15 million and your first year is $10 million, it can't work because your next 2 years wouldn't.
It's going to be $5 million, and then it can be like
$4.5 million, and then
$5.5 million. 5% even, right? So that's going to be more than that. So it's like $5 million, close to $5 million above, close to $5 million below.
That's right. Yeah. It's all within a very limited range.
I like that too. I'm fine with that.
You can't throw these. Cap circumvention. I mean, when those contracts fell from $12 million down to $1 million for their last 3 years when you knew they'd be retired or whatever.
That's right.
It prevents that from happening.
But they're already getting down on that too.
Yeah.
Because if a guy retires now, based on these, you know.
Based on
Pietro retires now.
That's right. Based on the rules about having signed him to longer than a 5-year deal from before. Re-entry waivers will be eliminated consistent with the cap accounting proposal relating to the treatment of players on NHL standard player contracts playing in another professional league.
The point here is, you know, for example, if you put Wade Redden in the minors and you bring him back up, somebody can claim at half the salary and you both take half the cap hit.
Currently.
Similar to what that's actually exactly what happened with Dallas Stars putting Avery in the minors. The Rangers claimed him, took half his salary, and Dallas took half his salary.
Right.
Now, being the case that you're going to get penalized regardless of whether or not the guy's in the minors, there's no point of having re-entry waivers.
That guy's on your books regardless right now, so there's no, I mean, it doesn't make any sense that
and you can
you
trade
have to,
some salary and deal, you can hold some salary and deal.
It doesn't make sense that you'd have to pay the guy.
Right.
And count for it on the salary cap and then have the potential of losing him
through re-entry
waivers.
Guys, I don't know if this might be a little bit different because it wasn't involving the AHL, but I believe there was when the Jets got Antti Miettinen. Wasn't that off of re-entry waivers
correct.
As well from Tampa Bay?
If you sign a guy out of another league, you have to put him on re-entry. They haven't addressed that here.
So would that not mean
re-entry
that
won't be there,
would that not mean that they couldn't have signed Antti Miettinen?
No, they could have signed. It means that once Tampa signed him, he was Tampa's property.
That's right.
Right, and I mean, that's significant. I mean, you look at Antti Miettinen, it was a good pickup for the Jets. So, I would that be that might actually be
pick
something
up for the Jets last year or this year?
Right.
Let's not get carried away with
exactly.
I mean, but it was an option that Tampa Bay knew the risk of signing him was that they potentially could lose him.
So that's something.
Well, signed with St. Louis a couple years back, another Jet in San Jose.
Vancouver.
Claimed him.
Yeah,
claimed Vancouver.
Him.
San Jose.
Him on re-entry.
Right.
That's right. The final point in the system changes, NHL clubs who draft European players obtain 4 years of exclusive negotiating rights following the selection in the draft.
All the point was that it used to be, you know, you have to sign him in 2 years or he goes back into the pool, and now you got to sign him in 4 years. Or
and if he does, and after those 4 years, if you can't sign him, he becomes a free agent. So, I mean, if you can't sign a guy after 4 years, you know, he probably doesn't want to be on your team, first of all.
Right, and that would be good, you know, if a guy decides that he'd rather play in the KHL or the Swedish Elite League and not the AHL. I would think that would be good, you know, something positive for both sides, really, because, I mean, then that means that the player will, I mean, the way I look at it, 2 years isn't really that long, and there's probably so many issues with teams wishing that there was an extra couple of years. They could have hung on to the guy's rights. So that's probably a pretty logical thing to put in there.
Think about from the time when the Jets drafted Teemu Selänne versus the time he actually appeared in the Jets
22.
Uniform. It was 5 years.
You know, 22 or 23, I think.
They drafted him, and I think, was it 88, 89, or 89, 90?
I think it was 88.
Yeah, so it took a while to get him over into Canada. Revenue sharing. This is the big one that the NHLPA has been harping on. My point has been I don't think the NHLPA should dictate revenue sharing. I don't think that's any of their business to the NHL. But regardless, NHL, this is what the NHL is proposing. They commit to revenue sharing of $200 million for the 2012-2013 season. In future years, amounts will be adjusted upward or downward in proportion to the actual hockey-related revenue.
It's kind of ambiguous right now in terms of what actually is going to be done. But it says, you know, the top 10 revenue generators are going to be paying it, but doesn't really say how it's going to be paid the rest of it. And I guess the key here, Drew, is that the requirements in terms of, you know, they're getting rid of the exemptions for places like the Islanders and
the
Anaheim.
The big markets, New York, the Islanders, and Anaheim, who weren't eligible for revenue sharing because they were in too big of a market.
I think more than $2.5 million or something.
No longer is that a factor if you're eligible for revenue sharing or not. At least one half of the total revenue sharing pool, 50%, will be raised from the top 10 revenue grossing clubs in a manner to be determined by the NHL. The distribution of the revenue sharing pool will be determined on an annual basis by a revenue sharing committee on which the NHLPA will have representation and input. They get a seat at the table. For each of the first 2 years of the CBA, no club will receive less in total revenue sharing than it received in 2011-2012. So if you're eligible in 2011-2012, you're guaranteed at least that amount.
I'm fine with all this.
Current disqualification criteria in the CBA for clubs in the top half of league revenues and clubs in the largest media markets will be removed, which is what we just said about Long Island, the Islanders, and the Ducks and everything else. And then the final one, existing performance and reduction standards and provisions related to non-performers will be eliminated and will be adjusted as per the previous offer. I don't quite know what that last one is referring to.
Right. And you know what? This is something that I think is again, is going to change. But
Drew, you're talking about the last story. The last clause there is basically teams like Nashville sometimes don't qualify for the attendance requirements, don't have to worry about it year after year. They just qualify regardless. That's what that means.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, Drew. Ezzy.
Well, the problem here in the NHL, and we've talked about this again, is the different tiers that we have. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, getting rid of the old disqualification criteria is probably the most important thing here. But, I mean, the important thing for, I guess, fans, because obviously the NHLPA is probably going to want, I would imagine, a bigger revenue sharing package or something like that. But it's going to go up, and there's no possibility that the percentage goes down. It probably just means that more teams are going to get a bigger share of revenue. So in years where they don't do as well, that helps them out. But, I mean, to be honest with you, the bigger issue is and we know this, it's ownership of these. I mean, in Long Island, they need an arena. They're it's up in 2 years. Phoenix needs a new owner. So I mean, this isn't anything that is going to make or break the deal here. This is just getting rid of some disqualification. I mean, that the criteria of you have a city that's got more than a million people. I mean, that was kind of ridiculous, right?
Let's get through these last two
Sure. Before
we go to break, because the 10th one is the make-whole provision. That's going to take a little bit longer to break through. Supplemental and commissioner discipline. Introduction of an additional procedural safeguards, including the ultimate appeal to a neutral third-party arbitrator with a clearly erroneous standard of review.
It's a pretty significant standard, clearly erroneous.
Right.
So I'm not so sure that, and player, I don't see the players jumping at that necessarily. They want a neutral third-party arbitrator, probably agree, that will come from a list that both have supplied, but I don't know if the standard will have to be clearly erroneous.
Let me ask you guys this. In terms of supplemental discipline,
right?
In terms of discipline, you know, when Shanahan has been making his rulings, you haven't heard much of if he's suspending a guy for, you know, 10, 15, 20 games,
well,
the guy usually deserves it. You haven't heard much of an outcry about...
I agree. I mean, I don't think it'll apply to many cases. And the truth is, you have a player doing a job. So I think you're kind of represented by both sides. But clearly the players, and this is a fear thing right here, he wants that completely third party, and that's fine. I mean, obviously, the NFL has had an issue with third party stuff, and with
Roger Goodell
with
and
the
Paul,
judge yeah. being the jury. And if they want to include it, then that's fine. I don't see it applying to too many cases. Remember, this is my opinion. The NHL wants us to protect the game and put safety measures into play. Donald Fehr is good at a lot of things. He's not good at the better of the game in terms of safety. You know, he protected steroids for so long. Imagine the effect that steroids has on
that's
a person's
point.
Body,
that's
and
point.
The effect that it has on the youth.
Yeah,
is something that he didn't account for, didn't care about. And he can preach all he wants about free rights and all that stuff and the amendment, all that garbage. But and be honest, to me, the Brendan Shanahan has the better of the game, I think, in safety in mind. So if the players are going to start appealing 10-game suspensions for guys like Matt Cook running around and ending guys' careers, I think that's garbage.
Right, and they won't win either.
But
if they're going to – this third-party thing is
– has to be used in the right manner.
It's yeah. fair. I guess yeah. it's logical, Drew. But the problem is – like you said,
it would have to be in
most of Shanahan's rulings are fair.
In a situation, yeah, most of Shanahan's rulings I think would be fair. It would have to be used in a situation where there's a great deal of gray area,
right?
And you know,
how often is that? So you give it to them and you say, okay, but in the one or two times you use it, okay.
You got to know too that you know when Shanahan makes one of these deals, he's got a team that they go over it and they make
That's
sure
right.
it's not. He doesn't just make that decision in 10 seconds.
I'm going to read this next one, then we're going to go to break, and then we'll talk about it. Number 9, no rollback. The NHL is not proposing that current standard player contracts be reduced, rewritten, or rolled back. Instead, the NHL's proposal retains all current players' standard player contracts at their current face value for the duration of their terms, subject to the operation of the escrow mechanism in the same manner as it worked under the expired CBA. Let's go to break.
Do I have to have an accounting degree to be on the show now?
Well, you don't have one, so we don't need to worry. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. This is not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty. You can reach him at 230-6129. One more time, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
If you're in the market, give him a call.
Absolutely. Did good work for you, Richie.
Absolutely. Supportive. Support IC.
Yeah. Drew, can I make a suggestion here?
I'd prefer if you didn't. But
can we talk about the lockout? I just love to talk lockout. You know.
It's can't get enough of it.
If there wasn't a lockout, I'd be pushing to talk about a lockout.
So after about 80 minutes or so of breaking down the owner's offer to the NHLPA, we finally get to the most contentious issue. And that's the concept. Is it strong to say it's a lie that there's no rollback?
Not in year one.
Is it strong? No, there's no rollback.
There is a rollback. There's no rollback. There is a rollback.
Right, sorry, yes.
You know, they call it the make whole provision, which pretty much, you know, to make it, to put it into as layman's terms as I possibly can, it's that the players pretty much pay out of year three in order to fund year one.
Yes.
Yeah?
I mean, that's about
that wasn't so layman. In fact, that was very astute, Drew.
Thank you. You know, and that's the players' biggest contentious issue at this point,
is that
they signed their contracts and they feel as though they should get the complete total value for the contracts they signed.
Right.
Let me ask you guys this question. Why are they wrong?
They're not wrong. Well, I'll let Richie get in too, because he actually will be a lot more astute than me. But but this is the issue here is the NHL from the get go has said your share of HRR is going down right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew it was going 50%. When we were talking about this 2 months ago before the lockout started, we said the NHL owners are going to push to get your percentage of HRR down. And the NHLPA started off by saying, okay, you know what? Year one, it'll go down 1%. Year two, it'll go down 3%. They still haven't changed that in their first of three proposals. But the players aren't wrong in the sense that they don't want their salaries rolled back. Mm-hmm. The question is, what are they going to do about it?
Let me read this.
Sure.
And this comes from James Myrtle. He did some good analysis.
Yeah, he did.
Longtime guest on this show. You know, the Globe and Mail. You can Remus will tweet it out on our Twitter page at Illegal Curve right now.
Remo.
The players' number one request in negotiations to date has been to be paid the full value for their existing contracts. Something the owners proposed to do in this offer by taking money from players in years 3 through 6 in order to meet the contractual commitments in years 1 and 2.
Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Very true. Essentially, it drops the players' percentage in years 3 through 6 into the 48 or 49% range rather than the 50-50 split proposed for the final 4 years of the deal.
But Drew, isn't it important to mention here that if Evander Kane signed a contract and he was, scheduled to make $4.2 million, obviously this is not what he made because I don't have it in front of me, but if he was scheduled to make $4 million in year one, $5 million in year two, whatever it was, he's still going to get that. It's not like their salaries are...
No. The problem is, though, you're penalizing the players after that, because what's happening is that's getting cut, if I understand it correctly, into the players' share of the revenue.
Right.
So essentially what happens is if that gets included, then it pushes the number up to the top and the players signing subsequent deals don't get part of that share.
Well, exactly.
Right?
So, but, the guys that are saying... The players that are saying, I don't want my salary... If you signed a contract, that money's guaranteed.
Well, other players are paying their... Essentially paying their contracts because it's taken out of their share, and then they're not going to get it, and then these guys are getting the money later.
Here's the letter that Donald Fehr sent to all the players earlier today. It's again, we can tweet it out. It's available. Pierre LeBrun published it on ESPN.com, so you can Remus, you can find it there and tweet it out again. In his final paragraph, Donald Fehr writes to all the letters and players and says this. Lastly, there is the quote-unquote make-whole provision of their last offer, there being the NHL. In short, player compensation, which is below the player's share total of last season, would be deferred and paid out over time, except that the player's share in subsequent years would be reduced by the amount of all such make-whole payments. In other words, player salaries in later years are reduced to make these make-whole payments in the current years. Players bear all of the make-whole costs.
I don't think the players understand it because that's not even written as I think as clearly as it can be. But keep going.
It's at the end of yesterday's meeting, Gary Bettman did say that the players were prepared to agree to all...
The owners.
Yeah. That must be... Yeah. That the owners were prepared to agree to all of the other parts of their offer, subject perhaps to tweaks, that I could call him about this issue.
Oh, if the players. Yeah.
If the players. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. At the end, let me read that one more time because I'll tell you what, the NHLPA is publishing a letter that's got spelling and grammatical errors in it.
Well, even the explanation there isn't exactly...
Somebody get them spell check.
At the end of yesterday's meeting, Gary Bettman did say that if the players were prepared to agree to all of the other parts of the NHL's offer...
Which they absolutely would not be.
Subject, perhaps, to quote-unquote tweaks,
right.
Then I could call him about this make-whole issue.
Yeah, basically saying, I'll bend on make whole. You give me everything I want in arbitration and free agency.
Pretty much. The make whole
negotiation.
For the NHL to call it 50-50 at that point and mm-hmm. saying that they're standing by all of the contracts they'd previously signed is disingenuous at that point in time.
Yes, likely.
I mean, it's just not true. Just the same, and I'll criticize the NHLPA at the same, you know, later on in this program when we go through their offers, yep. when they say it gets them to 50-50, when mm-hmm. again, mm-hmm. that's just not true. So, you know, for both of these sides to, first of all, these guys are too smart to have their wool pulled over their eyes. They know when something's 50-50 and when something
that's right.
isn't 50-50.
Yes, that's right.
And this clearly isn't 50-50, and so they should really just stop with these semantic, petulant child discussions that
but
yes
true.
It
most
is
shows
yes
won't
it
go
isn't.
Into the, I mean most shows won't go into it like you know this deep and talk about every single issue and see exactly what's on the table and lots of people will take it give a cursory glance to the contents and say yeah it is okay let's get going here because at the end of the day people want I understand that people want to talk hockey
absolutely right
so they're
Richard.
Taking advantage of that Drew.
Just
they're
because,
playing the public
you're right because the public
is both players in this situation
everybody's playing the public because nobody's going to for the most part people aren't going to go into this much detail they hear 50-50. They shouldn't believe it, but for whatever reason, they probably don't have time to go, you know, look at the minute details of this.
Do you think Candy Crowley would be willing to host the debate between Gary Bettman and Donald Fehr?
She did a good job on what is it, Wednesday again in the presidential debate, yeah. So we'll see if she's available.
No, but, you know, for the fans, though, that want hockey back now, and they saw that offer on Tuesday by the NHL that was 50-50, yes, that looks good. But, you know, in the sense of what really it's all about, and for what the NHLPA wants and the players, they are right to not like this deal, of course. So, of course, we want hockey back. But, you know, the NHL could have... There's definitely things that they could have included in their offer and will have to change for the NHLPA to agree to it for the lockout to be over. And again, this can happen. They're going to negotiate. They'll eventually figure this thing out. They have to. They have to. Or I'm going to have a lot of spare time on my hands.
You already have a lot of spare time on your hands.
It's true, but I'll have even more.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Craig Custance from ESPN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.